Welcome to What's My Thesis. I'm Javier Proenza, and today my guest is Alex Andrew Sanchez. We are actually friends outside of this performative thing that we're doing right now. Like, we kick it. I mean, you have a kid, so we don't always get to kick it. Responsibilities that I don't have.
Yeah. You usually get a call or a text if I'm out in the world.
Yeah. No, but also our friendship has sustained some questionable overlaps between guests that I've had on the show.
Oh man.
So I appreciate that. But yeah, man. So how you been? Like, let's catch up, because I actually haven't seen you in a long time, because I've been sick for a long time.
Yeah.
So are you still painting right now? What you got going on?
I kind of been gearing up to warm up to do what I'm supposed to do again.
Yeah. It's hard to keep it consistent, man. You get burnt out.
But I feel like I put enough of the pieces to where I actually produce something this past week, just time, material, sources, everything like that, you know?
So that's what do you mean by that? You have your canvases ready kind of thing, or you have your ideas of what you want to work on?
I have the stuff that I can make the kind of canvas I want to make. In the space I have, and do it exactly how I want to do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you had been lent out a studio space for a while.
Yeah, that was last year.
Yeah, have to say who lent it to you, but you did have tall ass ceilings as opposed to where we are right now.
That space was huge. Yeah. And even that, I filled it up really fast just because. The scale at what I was working, the scale, and then what I was doing to essentially I have this huge panel, and then I'm trying to wrap it in linen, and then when I do that, I have to size it on a structure separate, and then stretch it. And then in the process of me doing this, I had to have room to do all that. And then once I start painting on it, I can't move it by myself because it's literally too heavy for me to carry by myself.
How many people does it take to carry?
Just another person. But before that, I was specifically making stuff at 80 inches by 60 inches.
Which is the last size you can carry?
That's by myself carrying it. Yeah. That was maxing out on what I can,
you need lift. To hit the gym, bro. Get them gains.
I mean, the next time I make one, I'll make you carry it around and see how you do.
You're also a parent, and your son is in a pretty specific age. Yeah. And these are the last few years that he's going to want to hang out with you.
He's a rude dude with a tooth.
Yeah. Well, how old is he now?
He'll be 12 in May.
12 in May.
Yeah. And then he's going into the sixth grade, right?
Yeah.
Middle school. I think it's uniforms encouraged, but he likes wearing a uniform to school.
Oh, wow.
He's oh, cool, I get to wear a uniform again.
When I was a kid, I went to a school that it was for people with learning disabilities. If anyone's from Miami, they're going to know what Atlantis Academy is.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of for people with learning disabilities, but it also ends up getting a lot of kids that were delinquents or not delinquents. They just didn't get their learning disabilities handled early enough.
Yeah, so they send the bad kids there.
Yeah. So the bad kids end up there. And then that's when I started to party.
Yeah.
Those are the people I got smoked out on a trip to Epcot Center for the first time. I got so crazy high. I've never been that high again. And one of the things that was funny about that is that's when I got into sneakers, because that was the only way you could show status. So it was it kind of became a thing where parents were upset that kids were showing up with $120 shoes in the 90s. So were expensive.
Yeah.
And it was just a crazy, crazy thing. The things that you try to take away when you put a uniform on still have a way of persisting.
Well, I went to a middle school where they were trying to implement uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't a requirement.
Okay.
But still, my parents made me go to school in the uniform.
Oh,
and
no.
I was the only kid. And it would maybe lasted a couple weeks to a month at max, because I was just it was already rough enough, you know, that you're like the kid, that the one kid that wears.
Yeah, dude. It's like putting a target on you.
It was bad enough. They would like make you tuck in your t-shirt.
Yeah.
And you would like seriously get detention if you didn't tuck in your t-shirt, and you'd always have to try and like fake it, like just tuck in the front or whatever, you know?
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen any interesting shows, any interesting art that you've been excited about?
I know we went and saw the big Jeffrey Deitch show.
How was that?
It was, you know, it's like very, very impressive, and people make very, very detailed work, and like these kind of like worlds colliding and coming together, and everyone's different influences, but kind of this like a lot of similarities and a lot of familiar culture stuff, you know?
What do you mean culture stuff?
Like the guy, I just met him not that long ago, Michael Alvarez, but I like his work a lot, you know? And obviously he incorporates a lot of El Sereno and skateboarding and graffiti and maybe even a little punk stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I knew the references because I'd see the spots when I drive around there.
So he's doing skate spots and stuff?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's like these landscapes where there's like the rail yard, and there's like, you see like a barrier that someone's turned into a skatable object. And I had seen his work a long time ago because he had done the show at the Mars Gallery before I even knew the people there. And I went and saw that show and it was like, wow, very impressed.
So when I first met you, you were doing a lot more stuff that, or you were doing a lot of like cultural reference stuff, or not a lot, but you there were representational things of like.
I did a lot of
like cartoons and stuff.
A drawing, right? Yeah. Or I always call it like it's on linen.
Mm-hmm.
They're mostly pastels, so they very much feel like drawings.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've like completed several of them, you know.
What was the subject matter? I'm trying to remember what it was.
I think that one you saw there was it was an image of Nolan when he was younger.
Oh, okay.
And it was like he was like holding a knife, and I don't know if the knife's actually in the thing, but it's like from a real
photograph.
And it was and then there was some like cartoons sprinkled in, like some old Hanna-Barbera cartoons, and then what, like Nelson from The Simpsons. So those are all things that I'm into, right?
Yeah,
and they're just like, I'll have like a stockpile of like images.
So, but the reason I ask is because like you've sort of made more of a transition into like straight abstraction without these references. What, like, when did that start happening?
I guess when you met me, I was already doing both of that, and I thought of one thing as being what I do with a painting, and the other thing being very much more like a drawing.
Oh, okay. Do you still have that separation?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I would make more. It's just those ones always take me more time.
Which ones?
The
cartoon ones?
Yeah. They always take me much longer time. And then too, people when they do studio viz, it's whenever you give people like different thing, it always seems like it's hard for them to except like you either have to pick one or the other, you know? And maybe that's not true for everyone or every instance, but I know that I've experienced that. So then,
do you experience that with people that are maybe looking to show the work
or with
heads with other artists?
Yeah. No, with other artists, it's very different. It's always so much easier or nicer doing a studio visit with an artist, you know?
Yeah.
Cause they want to see everything. Usually they want to talk about the differences and with my experience with commercial galleries is they're just trying to get you to do it to be as easy as you can, you know, with like, well, this one's great, so make 10 of them.
Yeah, you know.
And someone, I did have a studio visit and someone said, if you make 10 more of these drawings, like call me and we'll have another studio visit. And nice. it wasn't what I wanted to do at that point. And so I would say that's like maybe around 2 years ago, right? Yeah. Because we're talking about the initial, because we figured out earlier that you first interviewed me 5 years. So that's when we started to get to know each other, you know, a little over 5 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You've given me some pretty good insights. In fact, you're the first person that I go to when it comes to pricing work, because I feel like you have a lot more experience in that. What were you first into? Like, what kind of stuff were you making when you first got into art making?
Well, I know little kid drawings because I still have them. So I would always try and copy things to the best that I could. Mm. Like I can think of three different drawings like that I have saved, and one is of a Shaquille O'Neal playing for the Orlando Magic.
Damn, that's old. Right?
It's off. Like it's pretty good for a kid's drawing. Like the shading's really good and like the features are really good. It doesn't look like Shaquille O'Neal necessarily, but it looks like a well-rendered person. Mm-hmm. And then I have a Bart Simpson drawing that's like Bart Simpson as Deion Sanders or something like that. When they would do stuff like that, Bart as other things. Uh-huh. And that's it's pretty accurate. It's pretty good. And then another one of like a truck, like a lowrider truck, where the backs would pop up. Like, you know, I thought that was really cool because it was kind of like Transformers or like this other cartoon. I liked Mask.
Yes, Mask. I remember. I had some Mask toys.
So there was like probably three things I saw in the world, like sports, right? And one way to be good at drawing would be draw like a famous person like that, you know? Simpsons, because I always liked the Simpsons once I was allowed to watch them.
Yeah.
Which wasn't till like maybe 10 or 11. I couldn't watch it. It wasn't allowed. And then lowrider cars, because maybe someone had a magazine, or you could probably even get a magazine at your school or something like that. Yeah, no, yeah. That'd probably be too racy, right? Like, because I remember being able to get skateboard magazines at school at a certain point. Mm. That was like a big thing. I was always really into magazines a lot, no matter what the subject was.
What a sad world we live in. Because like, you know, like it's cool to, like I remember I used to just end up having collections of magazines.
Yeah.
And I would just, someone once asked me if I was like a serial killer, because I would have all these clippings laid out for collages and stuff. And that fodder is gone, you know? Like I remember in school, they would just bust out all these National Geographics and be like, here, make a collage.
Whereas
nowadays, that whole experience seems to be gone, you know?
Yeah, well, it's like a form of art that's not there, and that experience of that art is lost to people who don't have access to it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's fine that there's not magazines or whatever, but it's just
it's something that was so much of a childhood, I think. I feel like,
yeah, you know? Just that experience.
And then also for the teachers, like, what a great day.
Yeah, exactly.
you're busy.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah. So and then when did you decide, like, art? Because, I mean, you've been at it. You're one of the people that I know. I would say, like, Mario Vasquez is probably Mario's art world, like, is probably one of the people that maybe knows more people than you, but you've been grinding the scene for like ages.
It's been fun going out lately, because going to other things where I'm older, other people that were older than me are now older. And like, we went to you came to the Gato Pardo opening, and there's so many kids there.
Yeah.
Some of those people like have had kids since I last saw them. And so they're like grappling with like the new the new problems of being a parent and openings and all that. And my kid's probably like the ringleader over there, because he's like on top of these kids just literally climbing it on the walls of the gallery outside the walls. And luckily everyone's cool with it. And then, I haven't seen some people 5-6 years, something like that, you know, and my son's like almost 12 and they're like, whoa. And then everyone's like, oh, all your hair's all gray now. And
it's like what your aunts used to do is like, I knew you when you were a baby.
Yeah. It's totally that. We went, so then I did as much as I could at community college it was like time to go to another school or whatever, you know? And then my teacher kind of was like, oh, you can go to art school. Like, you can go to CalArts.
And that was bad advice. Well, in terms of pricing.
That, and there was just no way I was going to go to a place like that when I already lived in a place like that.
Yeah,
like, just no way.
And by that you mean like communal living?
Like, no, just like suburbs out there, okay. Not connected to anything. Like, I wanted to move to San Francisco.
Okay.
And then, but I didn't.
And then what were you making at the time?
2008.
Did you have like were you at the point, it doesn't sound like it, but were you at the point where you were already thinking of like making art? Or
I wasn't,
because even after I graduated college, I didn't really have a voice quite yet. I mean, mm-hmm. I had inklings of a voice, mm-hmm. but I don't know. Was that the case for you? Did you leave school feeling like you had a handle on what your art making was?
Once I went to Otis, yeah, at the end of it, I was like, okay. I felt like I had been trained very well.
Uh-huh.
When I went in, I didn't know what I was doing. Because you have to come with a portfolio or whatever. Mm-hmm. They could give a shit less about like the two-dimensional physical stuff I brought into the portfolio. But like I said, I was doing video editing, so I'd already made videos.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very, very like, the importance was on them being linear.
Mm.
They weren't necessarily abstract. They were kind of everyday life stuff mixed with weird sounds. So they liked that.
Okay.
They were like, this is cool. We like this.
Because you're not obviously not making videos these days. Happened along the way?
I think just well, to make videos, you got to have a camera. Mm-hmm. You got to have software to edit. It means you got to have a computer. You got to have all these other things. And I think in many ways now it's probably easier.
Yeah,
to,
for sure.
But there, even just to have that stuff or be consistent with it, like the amount of equipment you need to do a podcast, right? Like,
yeah.
Like I couldn't.
You guys can't see it, but, yeah. But you're looking through it.
So that's why that just kind of fizzled. And I made videos post school and during school and continued to. It's also just like my videos always like a lot like my writing always become very personal.
Mm-hmm.
Where the personal isn't for everyone.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, totally. But then, so then, because then when was the writing stuff coming out? Because I would like, we talked, you read some of your poems, I think, mm-hmm. the last time you were here, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So like, when was that in
right after high school? I started writing, like, I remember at like 18 years old writing my first poem at the coffee shop.
Nice. And then what, like, are you still writing right now?
Yeah, I just keep writing. And anytime it's like painting. If I take a break from it, it's not that it's not there. I'm just like not, you know, and then I like trying to put stories in like the memory bank and like wait for the right time. Yeah.
That sounds more like a conceptual practice rather than, you know, like conceptual practice. A lot of times you have an idea and you're like, well,
yeah,
I'm not going to store that, like object in my house until I actually need to make it.
Yeah. It becomes like an itch, right? Like I'll start doing it because like I finally like it's time to do it.
Yeah. Have you done any readings recently? Because mm-hmm. I've only ever been to a poetry reading that you invited me to. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And was that the one at the studio?
Yeah, on the top floor.
In the elevator. Freight elevator at Sunset, right?
Yeah.
And
it
was so cool.
No, it was really nice. And it was such a disjointed group. Like, you know, like you go into mm-hmm. an art gallery. And you're like, and you can see, you know, like you have people that are like Skip Snow
mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
have that aesthetic. And, mm-hmm. and then you have people that are like really young and they're mm-hmm. like all decked out. Like,
yeah.
But I've never seen a more disparate group of malcontents.
Writing does that because it brings out it doesn't always have to be angry, but like people with something to say.
I say malcontent as a joke, I just meant like misfits.
No,
you know?
I know who you're talking about.
They're all my friends.
You're not wrong.
But it was crazy because it was like, it really, it was like, you know, and I think there's a vulnerability that was
that day was chaotic.
Yeah, it was.
I had some mushrooms at some point.
but what was interesting to me about it is that you saw people whose styles were completely different. Mm-hmm, you know, you had I always remember the woman that kind of rapped, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then you had other people, but like everybody just was so supportive and so loving, like which mm-hmm. maybe. Like on a level that the art world maybe isn't, you know, like yeah. the visual art world is like supportive
that's,
and nice.
That's what I like about yeah. that.
It's a lot more vulnerable
because people want you to be good.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's hard to be a performer. Like I think when I was younger, well, man, I started writing early when I was in like elementary school, but then performing it, I would do plays in school. And then I remember when I would be a good reader in front of people, right? And reading my own stuff, but that I would almost get to tears every time because yeah. I was so, it would make me so emotional. But I would get through it. And then later in life, it becomes so much easier, you know?
Do you feel like the abstraction stuff is a little bit less personal? Because it's pretty, mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No. I don't think it's probably even more personal.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. It's proven to be the audience is, it's very mixed feelings. People sometimes really hate it.
Like what do they say when they hated it?
I could think one of the last, when I did have the studio downtown and one of my friends that, has a gallery that came and it's very nice and usually comes and does studio visits and, you know, is always very supportive of my work, and the first two I made, right, like that were they're big, and when you came to the mm-hmm. it was they're a lot to handle in person, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And the first one I made was really literally dark, like mm-hmm. there was all this dark paint at the top of it that kind of loomed down, and I did that very intentionally, you know, and a lot of it too was I guess because I was thinking about this yesterday, you know, the people were like, do you want this space? Can you do something in the space? Do you like this space? Can you produce work in there? There's no.
And the answer is always yes.
Yeah. They're like, there's no windows. The lighting's bad. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
no windows, more walls to hang shit on.
Yeah.
I'm
going to
get
yeah.
so much done.
Can you make it bigger? And I was yeah. like, sure, like you have the right answer. You always say yes, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
But the whole time I'm like, I don't know.
So that was the biggest you'd ever
yeah,
worked.
Yeah. And especially those, I'm like always like I've made so many bad ones, and I've sold bad ones, and I sold ones I didn't like, and it's like that's not my job. Like you know, my job is to get better and make. I like if I thought I was bad at it, I would quit, you yeah. know, but I know I have something to offer that most people couldn't do or couldn't replicate, you know? And I remember at that time too, I was just like, I had to, because there's been times where specifically white and black, like it's a very loaded color for me to put into the canvas. And, even when I started out, like, you know, I was painting on panel and now I'm painting on linen. I've never like done a canvas, the white prime canvas. There's just like all these things that like, well, in terms of meaning behind color and it being loaded, those are things that I don't want to approach, you know, like it's not for me. And I've been hesitant to go like literally with black, like I'll use like a Prussian blue or like a really deep purple or something like that. As opposed to that, I'll use black gesso as the initial thing or even in the painting. But yeah, I remember I got really, cause I was just, the first thing I learned was I got really tired making those paintings by hand cause it was really physical and it was about the size of my body. And I kind of figured out through doing that first one, it was kind of smart to start a painting upside down.
Cause of reach.
So I kind of knew like I did want the canvas to show through and there to be raw canvas shown and kind of like an organic border. It's just years of making the paintings of what kind of compositions you want to create, you know, or at least try to achieve. And so it was I was learning all that in the first month of me being there, right?
Yeah, yeah. But you wouldn't have learned it.
No.
And it didn't go bad. Like, they liked some of the stuff.
Yeah. But so anyways, I remember when my friend came to do a studio visit, she was like, whoa, this one gives me anxiety.
And, but I think that your stuff can.
Yeah. And I didn't take offense to it. I was like, I didn't say anything to her at the time or whatever. But afterwards, my kind of afterthought was like, well, it should, you know, because I was thinking literally about, like, you know, the world and like living in Los Angeles. And it's like anxiety inducing and chaotic and the parking lots on fire, you know?
Yeah. No. And you are also in a sticky position because you're co-parent.
Of a
dissolved relationship, right? And so you can't just like leave LA.
We
talk about our anxieties about LA quite often. And none of it has to do with the art world, oddly enough. LA itself can feel oppressive, which, I mean, that's not to shit on LA. I love it here, but it's just, there's just so many fucking people here.
Yeah.
You know, like the scale and the sprawl is like the only, I can't think of anything, any other city in the world kind of like this. I mean, there possibly are, but it is like, you need a car. You can't, we have friends that don't have cars and we don't understand how they live.
And
you didn't have a car when I first met you.
I didn't have a car for a long time.
Lucky you had a girlfriend. But for people that haven't heard your first appearance, in terms of writing and stuff like that, what I think is interesting, you do abstraction, but it is very much in that, anxiety. It's not like, I think that what I do is a little bit more saccharine, you know, like my abstraction, my abstract painting is a little bit more like, satisfying in maybe more of like an traditionally aesthetic way. Whereas you're dealing with a little bit, which reminds me, your episode was titled the Everyday Violence That Doesn't Kill You. Which I like think is very, very appropriate. And that was just something you said. But, but it is interesting how versatile abstraction is, right? Like, because we're both working in abstraction, but I think our work has nothing to do with each other.
Yeah,
you know?
I wouldn't think so.
Mine is like, I like how plasticky it looks. You know, and like sometimes your stuff looks plasticky, but it's like ridges and it's, you know, topographically.
I know specifically in paintings because I've been dealing with oil paint for so long, I'm trying to get away from anything that does look plastic. And because it's all about texture and the color and all that, and that's like, I know as a technician from making those paintings what looks good.
You also have a lot of technical understanding about just materials, right? Again, you are one of my material mentors. It's funny like that. I ask you a lot about what I need to do to sort of, what my work would benefit from. And you always nail it. Like at first I started painting on paper and it was cool. But like you were saying, I hadn't seen them in person. And you also were like, I can teach you how to gesso evenly. Which I didn't take offense to. That's fair. You know about that shit. To me, all of these things are interesting in terms of I was talking to somebody that Tita Whitney who's doing representational work now, but she was saying that she got her start with abstraction. And one of the things that I was proud of myself for saying, because she was like, oh, that's a good point, is that like all of it is technically abstraction, right? So it's interesting. Are you aware, how do you feel about like where the art market is? Because you're one of the few people that I know that like you love being part of artist run spaces, but you're also seeing like how to get, or you're pursuing how to get into more of the commercial spaces. And again, you give me a lot of insights, you know, like one of the things that I got from you, which was interesting, and this is a paraphrase, so I'm sorry if I'm misquoting you, but the idea that a commercial space doesn't want one piece to be the standout. You know, like they don't, because then everybody wants that piece and they don't, you know, which is whereas like in the artist run scene, you see a lot more stuff where like something's the centerpiece and all the other pieces work around it, which is like an interesting thing. But do you find that it's true that the market has maybe flipped towards more figurative representational work at the moment? Or do you, when you go to like a Jeffrey Deitch show, like what was there? Because like, I felt like when I went to the Hammer show, there was a lot more representation. And I remember being at other Hammer shows, the Made in LA shows, where, you know, they had Charles Gaines stuff, which was a lot more coded, you know, and what's her name? Oh, I really like her work, but Horowitz. Anyway, she. I'd have to look it up. But I found this time around there were a lot more miniatures too. You know, like there was that one piece that was like the soccer stadium that had all the cars and whatnot. Do you find that do you are? I mean, and that's not to say that it won't go back. Hello, LAPD in the background. That's not to say it won't fluctuate back, but do you find that like, are you seeing as much abstraction out in the world when you're going out to see it? Is that my imagination that a lot of representational stuff is happening?
I don't think so.
You don't think so? What? That it's
I've seen a lot
of abstraction.
I kind of through social media pay attention to anyone who's like even remotely doing something in the realm of what I'm doing, you know, I feel like that's something I have to do. But the other stuff, I mean, I go to the places that I like to go and then I support the people that always have supported me and go to their shows, whether they show my work or don't show my work, you know, and I always feel like, well, oh, because right now I feel like I'm in this period where I have to make work again, right? Yeah, yeah. Like I did a lot last year, and even those
you fucking hit it hard last year.
Yeah, and even those that work that I produced, but like talking specifically about that one, giving my friend anxiety. After that, the second one that I made is my favorite painting I've ever made, and then the third one was like the perfect one where the gallery, I knew it was a hit and the gallery loved it and it went to go to a show in New York. And prior to that, leading into that show and because of that show, an older work that I had given them sold. And that was the, at that point, the most I've sold something for, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so now this year I got to worry about paying the taxes on that.
I have a funny anecdote where you were telling me like what you asked for. And then I was like, oh, so, and then you were like, I know. And I was like, no, I'm asking you. Like, I was like I would deign to condescend. I'm like, no, dude, I'm picking your brain. Yeah. But yeah. So then you're like, I guess it is interesting. Then, you know, maybe it was just what the Made in LA curators were looking for specifically that I'm responding to.
I went and saw that one this year. I don't always make it like, I didn't worry about it during the COVID years. Yeah. And I've seen other ones, but it's hard to drive to the Hammer and drive all the way across town. I don't do it very often.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's been a mixed bag since it started, right? Like, I don't know if you went to the first one. I hated the first one. I was like, all this art.
What year
like,
was that?
I have no idea. It's already years ago now. I felt like the first one was a lot of painting, but it all looked like stuff that could be wall displays and artwork for like an Urban Outfitters.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
And then, you know, my friend Juan was in one, and I always think his work's so
good.
Capistrano.
Okay.
Yeah. Who you've met several times now. But he's
a coworker of yours, not?
He's my boss.
He's your boss. Okay. Sorry, boss.
But he, you know, the year that he was in, the pieces that he and I thought were amazing.
Yeah.
The ones that I thought he did were these protest signs all made out of glass. And I might be the only person that cares, because every time I talk to him, he's like, yeah, just no one said it. I was like, man, that's like so loaded.
Yeah, yeah, that's hilarious. That sucks. Yeah. So then what, like, it's, is it too direct of a question to ask you what the work is specifically about? Like the abstraction?
Oh, no, no, no. Okay. 'Cause I've talked about it a bunch and I always talk about, well, it's always going to change, you know, and being,
is it fair that I feel like brown is a color that you're fond of?
Yeah, for sure. Okay, for sure. The thing with making that kind of work, there's just so many different options, right? Mm-hmm. And now I've had a little, you know, talk to gallery people. Gallery people are more interested in it. People would love if you can make work big. People mm-hmm. would love if you can make your work on linen.
Mm-hmm. Clean edges.
Clean edges.
That's the one thing that you told me. I was like, okay, I'm never going to have a dirty edge again. So tape your edges, guys.
Tape your edges. Yeah. And buy the frog tape.
What's frog tape?
It's the green one.
It's different than duct tape?
I've had a piece. No, it's like painter's tape, but even more adhesive, you know? So yeah. And there's just, yeah, I mean, that's the interesting, there's, because I think most artists, you, especially painters, it's really easy to be a painter. Like you can order all your canvases and have them delivered and then you just go. Right. Yeah. And then that's what
I was going to say when you were talking about how expensive computers are. Yeah. I know how much you spend on materials.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can buy a computer.
Yeah. It's like, I'm spending like $1,000 on one painting and how do I justify that? And I do have to sell stuff every once in a while to even justify that, you know?
it's crazy.
And I think that's because the galleries don't care. They just like want to see your best things and make a bunch of them and call us when you do that. Right. Mm. You don't get to see how hard it is to produce something large scale to make it really. And that's what I was like, well, whatever my experience was with the time I was allotted a studio, I just tried to use it to my advantage and see what I could do. And there was all these challenges, you know? And I'd say by the third piece that I had made, even just stretching it, I had finally learned how to do it right or how to do it to where it was nearly perfect, you know? Because after the first two, it was like, maybe there's a little bubbling on the side, right? We're like, what? Because it's like, what are the criticisms then? And it's like, literally like this, just like...
just technical.
And they're insane, like, you know? And but like, it's like, whatever, you know? I guess one of the advice I was given, it was like, if you want to make a $30,000 painting, make it... look like a $30,000 painting. Fair enough.
No, it's crazy. Well, it's also interesting that like you've been like we already acknowledged like you've been grinding at this shit almost as long as I mean maybe not as long as Mario Vasquez because he said 20 years. I think you said that you've been in the scene for like maybe 10 years, like since Otis. Right?
Yeah.
When did you graduate now, Otis?
2010.
2010, so like 14 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's like where, because we met 5 years ago, so now it was 10 years, and now it's closer to 14.
But I mean, dude, 10 years is a long fucking tenure.
Yeah. Also, everything was so different then. Mm-hmm. Everything was, you know, there were so many more artist-run spaces, not a lot of New York galleries yet. You had like Regan Projects and Blum & Poe and all that stuff. But it just felt much more tangible to be an artist and not really have to you know always be selling your work or make a lot of just like the you know and people didn't think LA yet was really that important or like a cultural center, you know.
Yeah. Do you feel like the Pacific Standard Time shows did a good job in changing that perception? Because I mean, that was kind of the objective, and I've heard people I've heard people say that they felt like that, like they were trying to say more was happening than was, you know, during that era. But I do feel like there's been a pivot from then.
Yeah. There definitely has. Cause I think there was it was very easy to bring in a spotlight of how many different things had happened through that. where
we should, I'm never drinking beer on this podcast again. We're burping like maniacs.
It's been like two burps for each of us, whatever. Suck it, audience.
I like the way you talk to my audience.
It's Saturday.
So anyway, sorry, I cut your flow.
No, it's all good. I think, yeah, that brought a lot of, like, there's so many rich histories in that, but I think it kind of, yeah, it's shifted. It cuts off there, you know, because the people at the box are still highlighting a lot of that stuff, you know. But I heard it comes back next year or soon, and there's
doing another one.
Cool. So, but everything I saw out of those was, yeah, I mean, you know, a learning experience, and there's so much rich history.
Yeah, I think it's like a history that most LA people maybe didn't even know when it came out. It was my impression. Mm. But at that point, I had only been here 4 years. So
yeah.
That was like around 2012.
Yeah, I was just like just graduating school and moving downtown. And
then after that, it just seems like more stuff has happened. Do you feel like COVID was also a breaking point for that transition into like less opportunities, less showing opportunities?
Yeah, for sure. So I think now my what I learned through that was that, you know, you still got to make the work. No one's going to make the excuses for you that's what's important, right? But then too, just like, yeah, you don't have to go to everything, and most of the time you're going to go to a gallery, and depending on where it is, there's going to be no connection, you know, there's going to be no connection with the people that work there or even the art they're showing. So just find where you even like hanging out with the people that either run the space or whatever, you know, it's just like, it's a job. These people it's a business. They're trying to stay in business, you know, they're not trying to, I don't know.
Whatever. It's not as mythical as people think. It's just a business.
Exactly. Exactly. Like,
there's not the secret sauce that you're missing.
No.
The secret sauce is selling.
Yeah. And there's so many more things that go into that, you know, than just, do you think you're an interesting artist, you know?
And I think, like, if you think about the way that people that buy that art versus the way that people that are artists think, like, artists are maybe less focused on something being an investment, you know, like, whereas like if I buy a piece of art for $30,000, I'm going to want it to hold value.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then there's interesting stuff that happens when you like, when people auction stuff and then prices drop or prices.
Yeah.
I heard a story. I don't know who told me this story. It might've even been on the podcast, but someone was upset that their stuff was being auctioned off for like twice what it sold for. And I was like, well, isn't that a good thing? And then,
I don't really know how that works, but I my general understanding that isn't good. And
it isn't a good thing. Bring up like all of the values?
Yes, but if they keep doing that, and then you can follow those news, but it's also like that's when you're really like it's a business, like, because I don't even know who these people are that this happened to, right?
Yeah.
You can know locally, right? Like, you see people who go. I think I've seen that people who showed or had artist run spaces and kept going at it and then kept doing the thing the gallery wanted them to do. And now they're like a represented artist, and they show at a gallery, and then that gallery helps them get a show at another gallery. And then you got like three galleries backing you. And then, yeah, let's go to market and see what your work is worth. I had that was a big, because I don't know everything at all by any means.
Yeah, but you know more than me. So.
But that was one of the best things, that was kind of more information, because you can't get it until you're in that position, was where like that was. I knew I was going to be in the show in New York, and it was so up in the air as the final date. And I really wanted to go to the show, and just personal life things, it didn't happen. And when I found out when the show was, I couldn't afford to like drop my life and fly to New York for a few days and hang out and have a place to stay and then come back. And it just wasn't financially feasible. It didn't make any sense in my life. And, I was kind of disappointed that I didn't make that happen. Right. But, you know, I had talked to another artist friend who was like encouraging me to meet more people at the gallery that I was showing at and know more of the business side people, which I think still is something I could work on. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not as interesting, right?
No. I mean, I will go with you. I will be your wingman and learn it. And then you can just, you can be the artist. No, I really am interested, you know, cause I've been doing this for 5 years. I started off obviously and this is not my art career. This is my podcasting career.
Yeah.
And like, obviously doing this, I'm getting access to people that I wouldn't just show, like trying to sell my work to them, right?
Yeah.
It's almost like but I really do find that stuff interesting because it is so nebulous and nobody talks about it, you know?
Like, I guess that's why I'm always hesitant to kind of, you know, I don't like...
Speak on it?
Speak on it is fine, but on the other part, like I'm not trying to get too involved heavily, you know? Like I want to, you know, that's what I think it's smart to think about where you want to show and what that means, where you show, like what caliber of art do they show, you know, and what does that mean for the kind of work you got to make? You can figure that stuff out really quick.
Yeah.
So I was waiting for the Instagram post, right? Because I knew that was going to be like, you know, I told people, but I knew that was like going to be...
It's a badge of honor.
Yeah. And it's going to be like a big deal, you know? That's even like getting the product or the photography from that the gallery shop of the work that they have, you know, was really important to me. But it was kind of a little cryptic to go about getting that because they have their own plans about how they want to show you and present you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But as an artist, I have my own idea of how I want to do that. And I, you know, I want to do it now, you know, I don't want to wait, like, you know, and I don't want to like, even to the point you get, I don't want to make more work. I just made all this work. Like,
yeah,
but I knew that would be a big deal. And as big of a deal as it can be, right?
Like
I went from below 1,000 followers to over 1,000 followers. That was the
bump. The push. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Go ahead.
But then I got to meet people who, because, you know, people come out the woodworks trying to buy something from you. They're trying to get info on you. And then they're like, oh, are you represented by the gallery? And basically my kind of was like, you could come do a studio visit with me, you know, come to my apartment in South LA. Yes, I did make this work and it's at the gallery. And here's people who at the gallery who I'm sure they'd love to talk to you about it.
Mm.
You know, I don't.
Cause so then you end up having to send them to the gallery so that they do the business side. Is that what you're saying? Or?
I figure no, cause there's no, everything I have going on is always like just verbal agreements and like
just consignment essentially.
And not even, cause I've dealt with people that make you literally sign consignment forms and stuff like that. But everything I got going on right now is just like, I'm just like, well, that person likes my work. They're there. I want something to happen, but I know I can also work more and do more. That's like, it's not like your life changes in one day or something. And what that means and what most people dream of, like monetary success. Right. And it's like, I don't know. Like,
well, it's a grind for sure.
Yeah.
But going back to what you were saying about like showing up and being at the business side of things, that's pretty much what you do at the artist run level, right? Like you find your the space that you vibe with, and then you just show up there all the time and become a known quantity, right?
Yeah.
So it's not that different. It's just maybe the things that you need to learn in that environment are different.
Yeah.
Right. Like, which is interesting.
I think with, you know, Alona and Andrew at Last Projects, I think I always surprise them. Like, cause even the first time I would just go to the gallery and party, and I was friends with Rashid, you know, and then they came to my apartment and I was just like showing them everything I made. And they were like, what? Like, you know, and then it's like, even too, I appreciate Alona as the person in the past year or two that pushes me for writing stuff. Cause mm-hmm. anyone else, I don't feel obliged to.
What do you mean pushes you for
like
writing,
so? For openings or closings or someone I know, like, hey, can you come perform? Can you write something? You know, and then that's the only time if she asked me that, I've said yes, because it's just been, you know, it's a lot to do everything, right?
Yeah.
So that's not like
for sure.
But yeah, what was the question?
No, I this is all interesting, you know, because
but the business side. So on that side, you're kind of doing the business things. So there was maybe several people trying to DM me after a night gallery posted my painting for the group show that it was in.
Do you want me to bleep that out?
No, because okay. I mean, okay. That's the fact.
All right,
yeah.
I just don't, yeah.
That's what happened, right?
Okay.
And you know, and they asked me about it. The owner, when I saw them somewhere, asked me essentially, you know, like a question about that. I don't remember exactly what they said, but, and I was just like, yeah, I got a nice little bump. Thanks. I knew that was going to happen, you know, like obviously, you know, cause I was like, well, I know how those things work. All my friends commented on it, right? It got like, I don't know, several on the Nada Instagram. It got like several hundred likes, right? Like, in the hundreds of like 700 or something. I think at a certain point, like on a space like Night Gallery or something, it doesn't even say how many.
It just says
this and others, you know? So I knew.
Well, so it's this, I think that might be something that you can just block too. Which makes total business sense. Cause if your post underperforms and you've got a reputation, like, like a gallery like that, you definitely don't want that to be.
So I was impressed, you know? And then, and I was happy about it. And then all these, like maybe three or four random people trying to buy something off Instagram. And
but not people asking you if it was available as an NFT.
No. I never got approached by anybody doing that.
Yeah.
And I just don't think I'm around people that would be interested in doing that, you know?
Well, I think those are just scams.
I guess that's a big thing on Instagram. What I'm doing is so specific and such, like, you know, it's...
Well, I think the texture, something would be lost as an NFT.
Yeah. I mean, abstract paint. And I never do the hashtags. Every once in a while I'll do it, but I could really care less.
Well, who knows how that even really works?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I have a copy paste set of hashtags.
So I was like, that puts me in good standing with the gallery, right? They like what I, like all these people on the internet, like it looks like I'm crushing it, you know? And then I knew before they told me that they had sold a work, you know, because it was supposed to be in the show. And I saw the install shots of the show. My painting was nowhere to be seen in there. And then my friend Juan was in New York, and I asked him to go see the show for me, just snag a pic or whatever. And he did that. And it wasn't there. And I was like, I bet you it's sold already. And then a couple of weeks later, I get a call or a text or whatever. It's like, how do you want your check made out or whatever? who do you want to come pick up your check at the gallery? Or
is that the first time that you did that you sold on that in that level, like, of that? I mean, I guess, like, outside of the artist run world, or
I think
you said it was you said that you sold something for more. Was this the instance that you sold it for more than you've sold before? Or
yeah it was a painting 40 by 32 inches. And
if any of my questions need to be cut out, I'm happy.
No, because this is all just very factual, you know?
Okay.
And it sold for, I believe, $10,000.
Okay.
I think that's what the asking price was, and then obviously you get half of that. So I got $5,000. So I've sold something probably close for maybe $4,000. Just out of my studio. This is the only time that a gallery sold something for me, other than a gallery in Guadalajara.
Okay.
Which was a Kuro. And they sold a drawing of mine.
Yeah. Patrick James Donovan's box.
No, I've sold a bunch of stuff out of my studio, and that's always been the best thing about having a show somewhere. Oh, and even Robert sold a painting from the first show at the Mars Gallery, which I was before you were around. So yeah, he sold.
I was around.
Oh yeah, but we didn't know, each, know other. Each other. But it wasn't at least a couple of years till we did meet, right? Yeah.
No, I'm making a joke.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. I didn't exist.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I don't think maybe you didn't live in LA before that place stopped existing. Yeah. So that's kind of just like, you know, everything's about here and now, the most important place.
That you know, you make a really good point. One of the things that I've noticed about this scene is that out of sight, out of mind, man.
Yeah.
You know, I left for 2 months.
A lot of people have come and burned, and like, it's like, how do you last, you know?
Yeah. Like I took the 2 months in Miami and then I came back and
they're like, who are you?
Yeah. It really was like that. Not in like a hostile way, but it was like life had kind of moved on. Everybody was like,
can we go to this new place, Javier?
No, it really was like that. It was like,
you weren't podcasting, bro.
it's crazy. It really is crazy. Like the scene, like if you take,
well, it's nonstop.
Yeah,
and then, there's numbers.
You know, so it's pretty interesting like that. Like,
and it's always trendy. That's one thing I always tell people. Like, art's always trendy. Like,
yeah.
And I'm not saying that as like a positive. I'm saying that like, just don't get so upset about it. Like, that's
No, and you know Elmer, and he was like, he really gave me some insights on
because I don't know, I've met him.
You've met him,
yeah.
And I thought you introduced me to him.
No, he's good friends with
Emmanuel.
Uh huh.
Yeah. I think you were present when I met him
probably the first time.
But what he said was interesting. Was that like, just the market sort of shifted to appreciate what he was doing, you know, which he was saying that up until that point, it really hadn't been the case, you know, which is interesting because that means that you can kind of just hold out like on, you know, you don't have to follow the market trends. You do your stuff.
Yeah.
And then the market catches up to you.
I think in theory, I don't know if it, I mean, you just can't do anything and hope that there you become the hot thing.
That's fair.
That guy works hard and makes work. So it's just like, Cause I've had people be like, we can't show abstract work. Like we're not going to show abstract work because there's no, well, I've had someone tell me that their gallery, people don't come there looking for that. And that they haven't had any luck selling it, especially at the level that they're not a big name gallery. They're just trying to stay in business and keep going. And, you know, that, cause it is good to know people and have that transparency, you know, and then even ask them like, well, what's the most you sell something for, you know? Cause then cause it's like, that's how you're saying, I give good advice on even pricing and stuff like that. Cause it's all,
I didn't say it was good. I come to you.
Okay. last time.
No, it is good advice. I'm joking. I've sold stuff for what you suggest. I got to bust your balls a little bit. It's interesting. Go ahead.
I made a little bit of money last year, which isn't like I sold $6,000 worth of artwork, you know? I have a job and like, that's like, that was like Christmas presents and weekend desert getaway and, you know, stuff like that. So it's like,
then taxes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I gotta do that.
You know, we only have like 15 days left. Okay. I'm also in the same boat.
Okay. I did it in like 3 days last year.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just going to go to someone. I'm like, I don't care. Take my money.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
But that's crazy, man. So then what, like, so you have a little juice, you had a little juice last year. Mm-hmm. What are your plans for this year? Like, how do you keep the momentum going?
Well, I tried not to get too upset that like I wanted to do a show somewhere and that just like wouldn't happen. It was just like, you know, and I was like, that's the positive side. I sold some work and, you know, a lot of people saw it and I got to get the images of my work and more people saw it. And, you know, one of my family, I remember I was like, well, the appearances are good and I'm happy and I want to make more work anyways. And I learned all the things. There's all these positives out of all just the work of it. And, you know, but at the time it was very taxing and stressful.
Mm-hmm.
But it's work, you know, it's like,
It's not supposed to be fun.
Yeah. That even though that's a cliche, I just enjoy all the bullshit that you have to do every day. You know, mm-hmm. like that's like just live in the moment. And I think my friend was making fun of me because I turned 40 this year, right? Like, because I've been just like kind of excited about life and challenges. But it's like this big reflection point, right? And why not? Like, why not be about it?
Why not be about turning 40?
Yeah, and then like just all the challenges of life and everything else. And
I think 40 is where you speed it up and you're like, okay, I got a little time left.
Yeah, because it feels fast.
Yeah, no, this last year, I'm what's it called? Like the main marker for me was the May 27th, which is when my dad died. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I mean, given I was drunk for a good chunk of last year mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. of that, but like, it just has flown past. I'm like, mm-hmm. oh my God, like my birthday's right mm-hmm. around the corner, May 4th, you know? Yeah. So it really is a crazy thing. I'm definitely becoming more aware of my mortality.
Yeah. Your parents going is something that you never, no one prepares you for at all.
Have you lost a parent?
I have a stepdad that's still here and doing great. And we talk and he's amazing. And he's been in my life since I was like 10 years old. And we also get along really well. He's funny and we have good conversations. But my mom passed a few years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And through complications after having COVID before we had vaccines even. And then my dad, biological father, passed away when I was 15 from a car accident.
Oh, wow. Oh, dude, I'm so sorry. But that's a rough one.
Who I had met and was a little bit in my life, but hadn't been for very long at that point. And then, yeah, so I was, it was just me and my mom till she met my dad and then them too. Man, even that was really heavy, especially on my birthday, just thinking about it and,
yeah.
The mom was a hard one, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I'm like, I actually went to therapy mm-hmm. yesterday for the first time.
Yeah.
And I was like, I straight up told her, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to deal with my mom dying.
Yeah.
Cause like, it's going to happen.
Now it's more real, right?
Yeah.
Like,
it's
just like this thing. But
well, I thought my dad was going to live until like his 90s. Cause that's where my grandparents mm-hmm. hit, mm-hmm. you know, my grandfather and my grandfather on my mom's side were like at over 90.
Yeah.
You know, 94 and 101. So
yeah.
Anyway, we don't have to talk about the.
No.
What's it called?
Probably a subject I'm trying to avoid the most, but it is significant.
Yeah.
And even because I talked to you throughout, you know, when you went dip back to Miami and you've been leading up to that. We went to see Fast and the Furious.
Yeah. And so, that's when I fucking, that was like, I told your son, I was like, you ready to see a grown man cry about cars?
Yeah, exactly.
So
it's, I never even had the opportunity to be like, you know, I'm also in the club and like, you know, it is significant and we are both around the same age and all the stuff, you know, where it's just like, and it's you can't just not talk about it, you know. Maybe you don't want to talk about it.
No, it's fine. I mean, I'm pretty open about that stuff, but I'm probably too open about it. I'm just eventually going to catch up to me as censorship gets bigger and bigger.
Yeah,
you know, they're like, 10 years ago you said this.
Well, how is that? Because I think most people listen to your podcast. That's where you get the mm-hmm. most, right? I'm just like such a YouTube person. I like watching the videos and whatnot.
Yeah.
Do both the platforms that you go to, is it more, it seems like they're trying to like, don't curse, like don't.
I think with like, look, man, I did a whole episode where I try not to worry too much about like that stuff. If I'm going to cut a clip, like for example, I had a conversation with my friend Christina about people, you know, you're supposed to say, or how you get away with saying it on YouTube is self-delete.
Mm.
You know, I didn't censor any of that, but what's it called? But you know, I would probably just bleep out the S word.
Yeah, yeah.
If I cut it into a shorter clip. Yeah. I don't think that, I don't know. It's always, I think as long as you stay away from imperialism, unfortunately, you're going to be okay, uh-huh. you know, and medical misinformation and stuff like that. Like, you know, but yeah, like sometimes people will say something. I think I've told you, like sometimes people will say something and I have to go back and listen to it and be like, does this break the rules?
Yeah.
You know, especially like I try not to mention major conflicts, but I'm not going to be like, you can't talk about that on the show.
Yeah.
You know, because that's like, that's me censoring it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a tricky thing. But I really appreciate you taking the time to talk about some of this stuff because it's exciting and it's interesting and you're learning about it. And basically like, that's how I learned just from asking my friends around it. And I think that like, you know, I've had people that have had success and you're sort of breaking into that and hustling that.
Like, yeah. It's that's interesting ceiling. And like, you should share information and experiences, you know?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I still get people that are still actively part of the artist-run scene, which I like, and I'm not anti-artist-run scene, but to a certain extent, like, not that I've learned everything about the artist-run scene, but like...
Well, it's just a whole nother
world it's a whole different world that I feel like I'm a little bit more drawn to, which also might be a sign of me selling out, but... You know,
I don't know. Yeah.
But I just think that a lot of people don't know. I mean, I myself included don't know how this side of the world works, of the art world, you know.
We
all go to school, we learn how to have art practices, but no one really teaches us how to business.
I would agree that maybe it does seem, I mean, art world's always going to be elitist, right? So to reach people that are you know, the kind of people that might have some insight to it might totally seem guarded, whether that's real or not, but why wouldn't they be? Because there's so much at stake in terms of people's careers and making money and not stepping on anybody's toes or being offensive or making sure.
And I haven't gotten jaded in a way that makes me sad, but I think that people, like, I'll have people on the show and, you know, like you listen to Skips and Skips was full of insights, you know, about how corrupt the whole scene is, you know, and like, and when I talk in those terms, some people really get defensive, you know, like, you know, it's an idea that I got or that Rashid Buhamedi brought up, which is that it's like really hard to make any revolutionary artwork and people get very upset, especially in the artist run scene. That I'm saying that because I feel like they feel like I'm invalidating their thing. And I'm like, no, it's still valid, but it's not like any different than when I, you know, I also grew up looking at a lot of like Christian art, which is like what, you know, it used to be corporate. Yeah. It used to be that was the corporate partnership. Like, you know, you know, I'm sure there were many artists during that time period that have been forgotten to history because they didn't have the backing of the church, right? Mm-hmm. Like, was Giotto the first person to really paint, you know, the way that Giotto painted? Mm-hmm. Or was he just the first person that had backing from, you know, like, was it maybe something that was happening more zeitgeisty? And, like, he took it from somebody else, you know?
Yeah.
Which happens all the time in the art world. So I think that, like, it's interesting to sort of, like... I don't know if it, I don't feel like I'm cynical. I feel like I'm just like pragmatic about it, but I think people get very upset at the notion that they can't change the world with art. And I'm like, oh, I don't think that's ever been the case.
I don't have an opinion on that either way. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
I don't feel bad.
It doesn't make me feel bad. And I don't think that like, that's not where your value as an artist is, you know? You're always going to be influential to people who haven't seen what you've done or people who haven't had access to that. But you're everything. It's okay to put less pressure on yourself and just to make what you want. And, you would know if what you're doing was fake, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I never worry about that stuff anymore.
About being fake.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just, I mean, like, I know it could even be a point of privilege to have a certain amount of validation, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, why even, fuck, dude.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even just like, you know, I know you have a hard job, mm-hmm. and that you work hard and you have a day job and, yeah. and all of that. And I know a lot of people that I have on the show have that, but at the same time, it's like, there is still a privilege to be able to take some time apart for art making, oh, right? Yeah. Like even oh, yeah. though you are a working class person,
yeah.
You still have that time to dedicate to artwork as opposed to somebody that absolutely doesn't.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. Even when I'm not saying I'm making stuff, I'm still making stuff, you yeah. know? Yeah. It's just now you kind of, you get different parameters, right? Like I know what's over there and what's over here, and if I want to go this way or that way, or if I want to make small drawings or whatever. It's just like, there's the more information you have from experience, the more it's just going to benefit you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything that we can promote for you? You're at, do you have underscores?
I don't know. it's
yeah. I'm sure if you put Alex Andrew Sanchez with spaces, you'll come up.
I think it's an underscore in between everyone. Yeah, and I don't have anything to promote at all.
No.
It's okay.
And then if you guys enjoyed this, like and subscribe. Rate us 5 stars on YouTube, and we'll be back with another guest and another topic that may or may not be art related. Although I've been trying to force it onto the art related stuff lately. Like, all right, let's not talk about your childhood. Let's talk about art.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, man, thanks again. And yeah, thank you guys for watching.